I believe there's demons all over these people.
Well, first of all, I just want to preface by saying that you're obviously doing something right, because every time I come on your show, there's intense warfare, and that's exactly what we're talking about.
In these last days, God's people need to speak the truth. Hi, I'm David Heavener, and I'm doing just that with my brand new show, David Heavener Live, where we cover topics the church won't. Join me each and every week with my guest on David Heavener Live.
Welcome. We are so glad that you are with us tonight. Thank you for being here. And of course, welcome to everybody who's catching us on the replay. All the archives are available on David Heavener TV, and we're just delighted to welcome a very special guest from my home state of Minnesota. But I think what's even more special is she was referred to us by one of our viewers who has a passion for what she does. So I am bringing to the stage Bonnie Gasper. Welcome.
Well, thank you for having me. It's such an honor to be here. And I did not know that you were a native Minnesotan.
Yes.
That UFTA is right. Oh, well, you were wise enough to leave. So good on you. I'm still here. We still have our kids here. So it's like, oh boy, you know, one of these days we'd like to land where they land, but right now they're here. So, but anyway, yeah, thank you so much. We really, Child Protection League, we sincerely appreciate this opportunity to speak to you and your audience and share what's on our hearts and what we're working on, because you really do have a tremendous program, and it's an honor to be here. So we had talked a little bit beforehand. It might be good to give it a little background on who we are. So
please, yes.
So we are truly a grassroots organization. We were literally formed by Mama Bears back in 2013 to challenge a specific bill in Minnesota called the Safe and Supportive Schools Act. Now, it was known as the anti-bullying bill, and it had wide bipartisan support, because who's against bullying, or who's for bullying, right? But we did a very careful reading of the language in that bill, and it was abundantly clear that it wasn't about bullying at all. Instead, the bill was about codifying into law all the things we're fighting today, because it was making protected classes of certain people based upon their race or their sexual orientation. It was normalizing the entire LGBTQ ideology. It was ultimately going to enforce compelled speech by forcing people to use preferred gender pronouns. And it was mandating something called social emotional learning strategies. At the time, we didn't really know what they were. It was just coming on the scene in the school lexicon, but now that has been fully entrenched. And it really was an attack on parental rights, because it was mandating this ideology in the classroom that most parents object to. Well, unfortunately, the bill did pass, but we were on the map as an organization. Then we discovered in the following year that in 2014, the Minnesota State High School League was secretly rewriting its state athletic participation policy so that schools would have to allow biological boys to compete against girls in order to remain in the league. And so we blew the whistle on that. Now, it's not a surprise because we recognize in this bullying bill language that because it was built on a gender identity platform, it was ultimately going to erase protections for women and young girls, because having boys compete as girls against girls was something we figured the voters would instantly recognize as really unfair. So we exposed their plan by running this full page ad in the Star Tribune. If you want to bring that graphic up, it was a powerfully stark image of the old high school locker shower room. And the ad simply said, if a 14-year-old boy wants to shower next to your daughter, are you okay with that? And we published the contact information for the Minnesota State High School League Board too. Well, it turns out the public was not okay with that, and they melted down their emails and their phone lines and everything else. And so we, of course, were attacked as, you know, tinfoil hat people, because the gender experts said this was never going to happen. Children just want to self-identify as their authentic selves, and nobody's asking boys to shower next to the girls. So then we responded to that criticism with another full-page ad. This is the one with the young softball player, and it was just showing her, and the ad simply asked if the new rules were going to be the end of girls' sports. And again, we were attacked as fearmongers and liars. But ironically, that's exactly the policy the State High School League was drafting to let boys compete as girls. So this, again, I want to remind the listeners, this was over 10 years ago. We saw it coming as a natural progression of this, of ignoring biological fact. And so here we are today. I mean, how many women of the year have we had now that are literally biological men? How many young women are getting beat up by mediocre male athletes and seeing their careers and scholarships stolen by these biological boys? And how many times do we have boys in the girls' showers and locker rooms and bathrooms now, and their personal privacy and their safety is totally disrespected? There's countless stories of girls being assaulted by boys in these spaces too. So we're very grateful that President Trump has used his power and influence to raise this issue on the national stage, and that he has taken actually many actions to protect girls' sports and the biological definition of male and female. I mean, it's kind of crazy we have to actually have an executive order to define that, but here we are. But so these events then really just underscore the core mission of Child Protection League, which is to promote the welfare of children and to protect them from violence, exploitation, and indoctrination. And we educate, equip, and activate parents and the public to reclaim self-governance and expose and defeat the cultural revolution in our midst. And so we do this then by advocating for parents to be fully engaged and in control of their children's upbringing. We want full transparency in the public school, which would include curriculum, their practices, their policies. We want to protect and respect parental rights. And we believe parents and kids have a fully constitutional right to practice their, freely express their political beliefs, their moral standards, and their faith in the classroom, and that children must be physically safe and their innocence and personal privacy boundaries must be protected. And we really want to get back to an academically focused education that's free from all this Marxist and unscientific ideologies. So we do all of that then simply by a lot of research, a lot of advocacy. We follow public policy, legislation, cultural trends, curriculum, all the radical groups that are creating this stuff. And then we get pretty deep into the history of what's happened in education. Like, how did we get here? Like, all to help people understand. And so we do a lot of this teaching and educating parents and the public to understand what they're dealing with. So really, you can look at us as really more, and it's an educational group. We're really just trying to help people understand what is this battle? What's this terrain? What are we dealing with and what can we do about it? So our website, I really encourage the listeners to check it out as well. It's pretty content dense and almost all of it's free, but we want it to be shared. We want it to be used. We want them to use that to help them understand what we're dealing with as well. But I still think kind of one of the craziest questions we always get is that some have marveled us and marveled and said, like, how did you know a decade ahead of time that this was going to be the issue today? Well, the simple reality is that it's not remarkable if you understand the tactics of the left. You have to understand the tactics because it becomes very clear then what they're doing. And I think that's a really critical point because people have to recognize how they're being manipulated and how they're being lied to. So really what I wanted to talk about today then, to kind of this lead in, is kind of an unpopular topic. It makes people uncomfortable, but you know, CPL has never been known to make people comfortable because it does challenge our convictions. But our main question today, and one of my really on my heart questions, is why then, knowing all of this, knowing what the educational system is today, why are Christian kids still enrolled in public schools? Why is the vast majority of them enrolled there? Because as we know, scripture is really clear about believers' responsibilities to teach our children, raise them up in the spiritual heritage for the Lord, that we're supposed to love the Lord with our whole heart, soul, mind, and strength, and teach that to our kids. In fact, wisdom, yeah, only the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. And that's the beginning of knowledge. And scripture says that it's from the Lord comes wisdom and from his mouth come knowledge and understanding. In fact, I love where Proverbs actually goes on to personify wisdom as a voice. She raises her voice in the open square and in the gates. So she's loud. She's visible, and she's in the center of social and political life. So then again, I ask, why are most Christians then, why are we putting our kids in the council of the ungodly or in the path of the sinners or in the seat of the scoffers? This question really struck me when a friend of mine was at a school board meeting here a couple of months ago, where the big issue in this school board was to, which this is all the new rage now too, is to put in these what they call school-based mental health clinics. And we have a particular school board member on this board who is a biological man who's identifying as a woman. So he has a real advocacy aim in his efforts to get this thing happening as well. But she was so appalled by what she heard that she actually contacted, we have a local church that has a massive public school ministry right here across the metro area. And she asked them to get involved or at least just show up at the meeting, you know, be present. At least come there to speak against it, you know, speak up for biblical values. But she was rebuked with the statement that, no, we're not political. We don't get involved in political issues.
You're kidding me.
I was kidding.
Unbelievable.
That was my reaction because I thought, what on earth? So since when is subverting parental rights a political issue, right?
Exactly.
When is allowing children to get a secret abortion or get a born after pill a political issue? When is have encouraging kids to, and counseling them to try in a different gender a political issue? None of those are political issues.
Right.
That's where I have always said, let's just take a look at the Bible. What issue is the Bible silent on? Let's list them, right? Stewardship, government, education, sexuality, life, justice, equality, business, enterprise. It's not silent on any of it.
Right.
So every issue, I would submit to your listeners that there's a political issue. Every issue has a spiritual and moral component to it, which makes it the domain of the church. That's my
exactly.
So when this leader said we're not getting involved because it's political, that therein I think lies one of the biggest challenges that we have as Christian parents, and you know, and when you have lay people and a church that is not willing to get involved in these kinds of things. So I think they've really shirked their responsibility to take a biblical stand. And I think it's really a missed opportunity. And I think that's part of the reason we're so far down this rabbit hole that we are now as well. But public education as it stands today, and I say this unequivocally, it is not a safe place for any child, much less a Christian child. I just picked up a copy of John MacArthur's latest book. It's called The War on Children, Providing Refuge for Your Children in a Hostile World. He calls it a full-fledged spiritual war for the soul of your children. I think he's 100% right. He said that Satan is deploying weapons of mass corruption against our children because the public education system really is a hostile world. And at every turn, our Christian worldview is completely undermined and denied. So I thought if we could next just take a really kind of a 30,000 foot look at the entire educational cartel, just because I think it's one thing to say that it's unbiblical and Marxist, but it's another to prove it. And so obviously we don't have time in this program to show your viewers everything about this, but we have enough here, I think, to show that the Marxification of education has been going on for a long time in education. And so I've got some information pulled together for the viewers here. So the first one is that video of Dr. Shirley McCune. Now, I'm going to give a little backstory on this too. So the Federal Department of Education, which we know right now President Trump is trying to defund, which we 100% support that. But it is one of the largest employers, and they were an $80 billion swamp up until this point. But what they do is they pump out standards and structures like school to work, no child left behind, outcome-based education, global classrooms, all this kind of stuff. They embrace the goals of the UN by putting the structure in place. And then they use curriculum to indoctrinate the kids. And what they're doing is to change their values or their attitudes and their beliefs. And it's been going on for decades. So this video with Dr. McCune, this dates all the way back to 1989 at the National Governors Conference. So if you want to play that one, I think it's very interesting.
Okay. That one I don't have, but I'll let you just give it a little recap.
Can I play it myself? Is it possible to share it?
It should be, right?
Let's see here. I have it on my screen, but how do I share that then? Oh, I don't know. I'm not sure how to share it. Well, anyway, she, you're right. I guess it's just, I don't want to do that. Cause I'm a little technologically challenged, but she says in this video, she said that education is no longer about teaching facts and information, but about the total restructuring of society, the total transformation of society. Those are her exact words. And she goes on to say they're going to determine the facts that kids need. Now, again, this was 1989, all right? So then let's fast forward to current present day here, NEA, the National Education Association. Now, I think there's a video of Becky Pringle speaking at the 2024 convention.
But it was just like too painful for me to listen to.
But the reason it's important is that she is heading up the largest teachers union in the country. And these are the people that are paying dues and they're collecting the dues, and they're writing policy and they're writing resolutions. And so she also talks about what their goal is for education. So do you want to play that one or do we want to bypass her rant?
Yeah, it's quite a rant, isn't it? Let me see if I can bring it up.
But if you take a look at all the NEA resolutions over the course of the years, I mean, they have completely shifted. Like the last 20 years are just full of the buzzwords of diversity and social justice, culturally responsive curriculum. And now they have a new lexicon called non-stereotypical language and practices. So again, all of this innocuous sounding stuff is just code for erasing traditions and the binary and all these different things.
Wow. All right, let's see if this works. Is it showing for you?
Yeah, I see it. Yep.
Okay. And?
That we will not only unite our members, but we will unite this entire nation to reclaim public education as a common good, as the foundation of this or any democracy. But you and I know we can't stop there. We have to transform it into something it was never designed to be. A racially and socially just and equitable system that prepares every student, everyone with determination and defiance. We will protect public education. We will fight privatization. We will fight vouchers. We will fight any and all schemes to drain resources from our beloved public schools. Keep going, NEA delegates. We can do this work. We must do this work. We get to do this work. We will do this work because our students are depending on us to win all the things. NEA, we have to win all the things, all the things, all the things. Our colleagues are depending on us to win all the things. Keep going, NEA. To preserve our democracy, we must win all the things. Delegates, we won't go back. We will keep going forward because we are the NEA. We are the NEA. We are the NEA. And that's what we do.
Yes, slightly unhinged.
Wow.
But again, this is important for people to see. These are the kinds of people that are in charge of education right now. I mean, they form so much policy, and teachers, the vast majority of American teachers are part of this union. Now, I'm not saying they all subscribe to this kind of thinking and ideology, but this is the brains, and this is kind of the systemic organism of the whole organization. That's the direction that it's going. And she said some key things in there. One was transform education to something it was never meant to be, or racially just, and all these social justice kind of buzzwords. But the focus has long ago, they abandoned academics a long time ago. It's all now about equity and diversity and social justice and all these Marxists, you know, the oppressor and the oppressed and systemic racism and all this kind of stuff. And so none of that's an education, that's an indoctrination. And basically what they're doing is they're just training our children to become these radical, controllable, predictable little Marxists who are going to champion the destruction of their own country and their own heritage. Because for the most part, they don't even know their true heritage. They're not being taught their heritage. So then we can move on to the ALA. There's a graphic showing Emily Drabinsky. She was elected as the president of the American Library Association back in 2022. And the day that she was elected, she posted this on her tweet, on her Twitter feed. She said, "I just cannot believe that a Marxist lesbian who believes that collective power is possible to build and can be wielded for a better world is president-elect of the ALA." So she's coming right out and saying it. But what's even more interesting is she's quite vocal. She does a lot of, and if you ever listen to, just Google her and you can hear all kinds of her interviews, but she advocates for pointing toward kids towards her own brand of queerness, as she calls it. She frequently expresses open disdain for parents who want vulgar and pornographic books pulled off the shelves from libraries. During one interview, she actually called parents that want to do this, she called them, quote, violent people in a moral panic, black, brown, racist, armed, Christo, fascist, right-wing extremists, domestic terrorists bringing guns to libraries.
That's what I do every day. Yeah.
Every day. Yeah. So these are the parents who don't want their kids reading porn, right? That's how she views us. She is also a big fan of drag queen story hours, which I'm sure your listeners are familiar with. This is where grown men dress as hypersexualized, you know, women are reading LGBTQ-affirming books to kids. Well, I think the first logical question to ask yourself is, when was the last time any of your listeners put on a slutty dress to read to the grandkids?
Exactly. Right.
It's just not something we do. I mean, we don't groom our children.
Right.
Grooming our kids.
Right.
There's a therapist, a licensed therapist by the name of John Euler. And I started following his work when he was all over this drag queen story hour thing. He has worked with 4,000 serial criminal sexual offenders in the course of his career.
Oh, and my.
Drag queen story hour is the greatest grooming program that was ever devised. And I think. But I think another thing that's very interesting and ironic about the ALA. So now that President Trump has defunded one of their funding mechanisms that pay for all the drag queen story hours, they're actively soliciting funds to all of us Christo fascists, right wing extreme domestic terrorists to save their beloved libraries. So the very parents they disdain, now they're telling us that he's trying to take your library away and we must save it. Call themselves the protectors of free speech. They're, you know, we're the book banners, they're not. I mean, it's so funny how they've changed the narrative and flipped it on its head, but they're the defenders of free speech.
Exactly. We're going to take a quick break here and be right back. And I think you might have something, a unicorn picture to show. And I mean, there are unicorn stuffed animals at my granddaughter's bedroom. So this is going to be very fascinating. We'll be right back. I just had to invite another Minnesotan to the show. So, all right, tell me about the unicorn picture.
I will. So before we do that, though, can I give you the background on that as well? So
please.
Another graphic I want you to bring up, and I'll give you the background on this because that's really important, because that the unicorn picture is part of the whole curriculum that is now, as we would say, fully Marxified as well. So if you can pull up that table 34, Alfred Kinsey, I'll explain what's happening here. Now, we could talk for, hours about curriculum. And one of the areas where people can obviously recognize there's some serious problems is comprehensive sex ed or sex ed education. And they think that's limited. But I want
and to- before I show this, I should just say if there are young children in the audience, just give them a few minutes away.
Right. You don't want to listen to this part. Right. So CICUS is a Sexuality Information and Education Council of the U.S. They write the vast majority of sex ed curriculum for the country as well as mostly the world. But this chart by Alfred Kinsey, well, CICUS, first of all, was formed by the Unholy Alliance between Planned Parenthood and the Institute. And so it was the late Dr. Judith Reisman who went through his research, and that table you just hit up, table 34, was the one that jumped out at her, which exposed him for the pedophile that he actually is.
Exactly.
You're right. He had participants abusing male infants, toddlers, and boys. He filmed them and recorded their crying and screaming and struggled to get away as child orgasms. So the man was a pedophile, but instead his research was embraced as scientific and medically accurate. We keep hearing that term, right? So his research then completely transformed how we view human sexuality. And I'm going to explain to listeners later, you know, why that matters from this point on. And so that's been used as a basis for social change. So you had the graphic up again about from CICUS, where they say they're advancing sex ed for social change since 1964, since they were formed. They come right out and say it. And then you go on to their mission vision statement. It says the same. They view sex ed as the foundation for a long-term culture shift. They want to use comprehensive sex ed as a vehicle for long-term culture shift. I mean, this is radical stuff. I don't think parents fully believe or fully understand that this whole gender ideology instruction didn't come out as a response or an attempt to help kids who are confused about their gender, but it's a literal and a deliberate vehicle to create the culture shift they wanted. It's to change their values, attitudes, and beliefs of the kids by changing their worldview, because this is where the cultural revolution takes place. It's in the culture, it's in the mind, it's in the worldview of the kids. So parents are thinking it's only in the health class, but it's not. So yeah, if you want to pop up that gender unicorn, This is a graphic that has been used in preschools and pediatric offices for years. Kids are taught that gender is a construct. It's basically a combination of these five elements. It's who or what you think you are, who or what you are emotionally and physically attracted to, your sexual organs, which they call the sex you were assigned at birth, And then it's a deliberate description to make, or it's a deliberate description to make your biological sex sound arbitrary, right? The doctor just assigned it. And that is what they use as the gender unicorn. So again, this has allowed our academia to claim now that there's more than, I think we have more than 175 different genders and counting. That is just a construct and it's not fixed. It's totally unbiblical. It's totally crazy. But this is what our kids are being taught from as early as preschool. It's even used in the pediatric offices as well. So then there's another graphic, or actually it's a little video I would like your parents, your listeners to hear as well. Because this is one of the great concerns too. So parents think that they can opt, I mean, you can opt your children out of things. And they think once they've opted them out of health class, they're covered, but they don't understand that this whole gender ideology has permeated everything. It's permeated every subject, every grade level, all the content. And so there's a graph, or there's a movie from Burlington, Massachusetts. It's a school board hearing. This was just a couple of months ago where parents had thought they'd opted their kids out of a all this kind of an invasive survey, which comes from SEL, by the way. And here, 11-year-olds were given a graphic survey about sexual intercourse, where it asked them about their gender identity, their sexual orientation, what kind of sex they were having, their use of sex toys, and butt sex. So again, 11-year-olds. So just play this clip.
On behalf of my son and a group of other mothers who also have special needs children like mine, and I speak for all of them when I say that we have completely lost our trust in the Burlington public school system. My son came home last week, clearly shaken up, and asked to privately talk to me. He said, "Mom, we took a test today at school, but the questions were really weird. I didn't know how to answer them. I didn't want to take the test, but my teachers made me. It wasn't until I saw the questions posted on Facebook that I understood what he was talking about. This was a calculated and deliberate attack on our children's innocence and denial of our parental right to protect our minor children. With this survey, you have exposed our innocent children to mental pornography. This is sexual grooming and downright sexual assault on our children. You have corrupted their innocent minds by exposing them to explicit sex or sexual acts that most adults would not even tolerate being asked about. Not only were they asked about if they've ever done any of these things, but you went a step further and described these sexual acts. How dare you step over our parental rights and expose our minor children to these lewd and disgusting acts? We have been protecting our children from the day that they were born, and in one day, you've destroyed all of our work."
Her righteous anger is spot on. My heart just breaks for her, because there's millions and millions of parents out there who feel exactly as she has. You know, they have been protecting their children since the day they were born. And in one day, one survey, one class, that innocence is completely violated. And the kids are being just deluged. They're just being barraged with this kind of stuff. Now, that whole hearing went on for a lot longer. And I have to mention, there was another testifier in there whose son was also in the same class. He wasn't taking the survey. He actually was able to opt out of it, but his best friend was. And his best friend was confused about the butt sex question. So he turned around and asked him, "What do you think that means?" And of course, as all 11-year-olds would say today, "Well, let's just Google it." What do you think they're going to encounter when they do a Google search on butt sex, right? So this is the kind of stuff that is hammering our children day and night. Sometimes the kids are telling their parents, but most times they're not, because they're embarrassed. They don't even know what they're dealing with, and it's so uncomfortable, and God made us that way, right? We have a natural built-in ick factor, so do children, and they don't know what to do with this kind of information, especially when it's coming from someone they're told to trust, right? Especially when it's coming from someone in the classroom who they're supposed to be trusting, which is their teacher. So it's a huge, huge problem. The next thing I wanted to talk about a little bit then too is social emotional learning. Now, this is an interesting quandary. So we did CPL did a nationwide survey about a month and a half ago. And we wanted to, and a lot of the questions that we asked, one of them was, how is SEL? Is it viewed favorably by parents or not? And most parents viewed it favorably, because social emotional learning is just littered with innocuous and wonderful sounding words. It's sold as a way for kids to manage their feelings and their behaviors and emotions and decisions. I mean, these are all things we want our kids to be able to do. But SEL is the mothership of critical race theory, diversity, equity, and inclusion, It's full of cultural competency training, white supremacy training, full of oppression wheels. It has this whole child approach education. It incorporates mindfulness training, which is teaching our kids to be open to Middle Eastern kind of meditative practices. This is all over the classrooms in Minnesota and everywhere. And these are all pedagogies that are designed to shape the values and attitudes and beliefs of our kids. And it's literally taken over our schools. In fact, it's not meant to be just for the schools. It's meant to be for the whole community as well as your family. And so SEL teaches from a standpoint, they call it a trauma-informed MTSS, multi-tiered system of support, which basically, to make it really simple, it just data mines our kids through surveys and assessments, and they measure how these kids align with the SEL objectives. If you don't align, interventions are used. Every child is assumed to enter at level one trauma, and then it goes on them from there to three. And they and it's designed to restructure all of society, include, again, like I mentioned, your local family, your local community. And so what I really want people to do and parents to do is just get on our website and read up about social emotional learning. It's not what you think it is. Don't just read the literature that's the self-report that's coming home from the classroom, because it sounds wonderful, but it is absolutely not wonderful. And I think David has done some programs in SEL as well, and the Fetzer Institute and CASEL and Alice Bailey and the occultist background behind SEL, because it's legit. It's real how this was all formulated. So it is not a good structure, but it's been so well marketed, so slick, that parents have fallen for it hook, line, and sinker. And so this is a huge battle we see on our front. We have to help people understand what it really is, that it's really, really dangerous.
Wow. And I've just to back up, when you mentioned, like, you as a parent, I would opt my child out of certain class or you know, certain curriculum, but yet there are still ways that they are being misled or mind controlled. And we'll pull up one of those videos when we get back. We're going to just run to a quick break here. And go ahead and mention your website, if you will, for me, please.
Sure. Childprotectionleague.com.
Okay. .com.
Yep. .com.
Welcome back. And we have Bonnie Gasper from Child Protection League with us, the website, childprotectionleague.com. And she has revealed some things, like I see things that come home from school and it all looks good, but now she's uncovering this even occultist agenda behind many things. So thank you, Bonnie. Your information, all the resources are just absolutely invaluable. And I appreciate you taking the time to open our eyes.
Well, it's what we do. We really are in the education business, trying to help people understand what they're dealing with, because they can sense something, right?
Mm-hmm.
Most parents sense something is just off, or something's not quite right, and also this explosion of mental health amongst our children, this explosion of the gender identity crisis, all of this stuff is a symptom of what's going on in the school. And so we've kind of gone through, like, the different mechanisms of, you know, how education has been Marxified, but now I kind of want to explain, like, how did they do that? I mean, why did we get here? And I want to help people understand, how did it get like this after so many years? I mean, what happened? Well, we have to kind of go back. I'm not going to go back through a whole history here, but, you know, over 70 years ago, the Marxists infiltrated our educational system, and they knew that the center of any revolution was not economic, but it was the culture. They knew that children were a captive audience, and the best way to change a culture was to get to the kids. So they started this long march to the institution. So they targeted four primary things. They targeted truth, they targeted language, sexuality, and the traditional family, because those are the four pillars that support and sustain any civil and healthy society. So when it comes to truth, they've been taught, and the kids believe this now, there's no such thing as objective truth. There's no such thing as absolute truth, right? Your truth is yours, mine is mine. Somehow they can both coexist as truth, even if they're fundamentally in total disagreement with each other. I mean, it's completely nonsensical, and it rejects the concept of truth, right? Truth is what's true by definition. It's not simply what one chooses to believe. Truth is what's true, whether you choose to believe it or not. That is what truth is, but they're not taught that. So all these different truths can coexist. Then they deconstructed the language in such a way to mask the truth. So what I mean by that is, well, this whole trans, transgender healthcare, let's say. Surgically removing perfectly healthy sex organs in kids is now called gender affirming surgery, right? That's how they twist the language to make it sound palatable. It's just because they understood that culture flowed downstream from the language. If you can force people to use pronouns, it starts changing the way they think. If you can change the way children think and speak, you're going to change the culture. If you change how they speak, you're going to change how they think, which is going to change their whole fundamental worldview, which is going to change what they stand for, fight for, and fall for. And then they hypersexualize the kids. We went through that a little bit, but that was simply to break down social norms and traditional marriage. All of it was designed to destroy the family, because the family is really the last, it's really the last institution, the God-ordained institution standing against all of this influx of the satanic influence of and satanic forces behind Marxism. Because the family can control, you know, how much comes into the family, it can kind of control, you know, how much is allowed in. So Satan's absolutely after the family because it is the insulator. So this push is super, super strong. And that's why they're going after kids at younger and younger and younger ages with like things like government run daycares, you know, preschools, you know, and it's not really about their personal success. It's really about shaping their worldview and to conform them. So that's all of that to say, does it sound in like the school, like education today is a safe place for our Christian children, much less any child? And so I guess I want to ask some of the challenging questions. With all of this that's going on, why are our Christian kids still, the vast majority of them, in the public school system? Because I guess first question is it true that can a Christian child really be an effective missionary in their public school? And I want to just give a real simple little anecdote, because I think it makes it abundantly clear that it's really difficult. So let's say, you know, little Susie comes to kindergarten. She's perfectly content in her girlhood. Suddenly she's confronted with a classmate who's a boy named Sam last week. Next week he's dressed as a girl. Now she's supposed to call him Jane. He's got ponytails. He's in her bathroom. He's wearing a dress. She can see with her own eyes that he's really not a girl. But she's told that to be a loving friend, she has to celebrate and accept Sam now in his new identity as Jane. Is she old enough to sort that out? Is she old enough to know that it's more loving to speak the truth and not encourage Sam to believe this lie about himself? But let's say also that she does go to her parents and they want her to do the right thing. Then her parents are setting her up for a battle she's not equipped to handle, right? She's not equipped to fight this kind of a battle in her classroom at 6 years old. Or worse, let's say the parents compromise. And they say, well, it's okay to go along just to get along because they don't want to suffer any repercussions. After all, you want to be a welcoming and inclusive and loving friend. Well, then she sees that her parents' convictions are situational too. All of this is very destructive for our children. And in a lot of the documentation about SEL especially, you can, as you read through it and get deeper and deeper into the context and the text, they even talk about the fact that this is going to create massive cognitive dissonance in our children. They know this. They know they're creating this cognitive dissonance. And that's why I think is one of the things that's contributed to this massive mental health crisis in our young people right now is that they are really confused. They're told not to believe what they can see with their own eyes. And then I also wonder, is it a lack of conviction on the part of the Christian parents? Is it a lack of discernment? Are they unable to discern that what their kids are being taught is really a false religion in school called Marxism? Schools are not value neutral. People think they go there and they really don't have a value system, but they do. Marxism is a secular humanism. It's distinctly atheistic. It's diametrically opposed to God. And actually, Marxism hates God and it wishes to destroy God. So again, it's kind of like, why would we put our kids into a system like that that's actually going against everything we want them to believe? Or one of the other things we hear a lot is have many parents just kind of succumbed. In your first intro, one of those first ads that you ran, David said something about in these last days. Well, I run into a lot of people that are at peace with all this because they think it just means the end is closer. We're just supposed to rejoice. It's inevitable. It's God's plan. So they don't have a responsibility to actively or publicly oppose the evil. Just rejoice that the end times are upon us. We don't resist the persecution. We just succumb to it. I guess I'm wired differently. I think the destruction of this earth, obviously we realize it is inevitable and we are in the last days, but I don't believe that we're here to just roll over and raise the white flag. I believe that in the simple act of exposing evil, which is one thing Christians are called to do, right, is to expose evil. We also point to good and point to light. And in the simple act of doing that, we hope that many will come to a saving faith in the Lord as well. And they will be exposed to the light. So I don't buy this whole, we're just not going to get involved. It's just political. We're just not going to do it, right? So I think that's a dangerous mindset as well, in my humble opinion. So, you know, Vodi Bakum, I think he said it really well. I think one thing Christian parents seem to forget is that we keep sending them to Caesar for their education, and then we're surprised when they come out as Romans, right? Whatever influence they have, where they're spending their time, that is what's going to rub off on our kids. So that's kind of the whole kind of 30,000 foot view, the overall analysis. And then, of course, you know, there's some really good things that are happening right now with this current administration we could briefly touch on.
Yes, but thank the Lord. So yeah,
<I know.
laughs> if I were a parent with young children, maybe I can't afford a private education. Like, how do you answer all of the objections, you know, the reasons that it's just so much easier and convenient and, you know, busing and everything to have children at the public?
That's a great question, because that was one of the things in our survey too, was overwhelmingly parents overwhelmingly wanted their kids out of the public school. I mean, I think it was like 70% said that if they had a choice, they would take them out of the public school and do something different. So homeschooling is an obvious option. Homeschooling is so well formed today. It's not, you know, the comic book, you know, mantra of them being not socialized. I mean, that nothing could be further from the truth. I mean, especially if you've ever were exposed into co-ops here in Minnesota, they're exceptional. These kids are being taught by professors and business people, and they have co-ops that they get together. So they have all kinds of social interaction. I mean, one of the biggest ones has about 570 students, I think, that get together about 3 days a week in a local church, and they're thriving. So that's an obvious option. Another option would be forming even your own little co-op. During COVID, we saw a lot of that happening, where parents just hired a good teacher who has been kind of maybe pushed out of their job because they can't deal with doing this kind of stuff. They were looking to be able to teach the way they want to teach, and they just hired they just got some families together and built a little local school. And that's been very exciting. And I think a long-term strategy, of course, is, and I think this is something that hopefully Trump is on board with, is tax credits for parents. I mean, I think we have to cut off the whole, we have to look at public education completely differently. Right now, it has no incentive to change. There's no mechanism in place for it to change. It's not going to self-correct, because the funding is abundant, the spigots never shut off, and they have it for life. But competition always drives change. And so I think if we can get some of those things to change, that would be really good. And I think we're going to see some changes with some of the CEOs that have come down. You know, defunding education is going to be a huge one.
Yes.
But again, that's not going to fix it, though, right? We know this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have laid their eggs in all the state departments of education.
Mm-hmm.
So those have hatched, and they have a desire to survive. But that's where I think there's going to be more of this demarcation between blue states and red states.
Mm-hmm.
If you've been following our decline academically in Minnesota, it's been pretty catastrophic.
Yeah. Oh, tragic.
Well, I think I was reading somewhere that I think funding, I can't remember how many years it was, but funding was up 108% in public education, but academic scores were sinking at the same time. So it doesn't
have
money.
Right.
But I think one of the other things, a couple of those, if you wanted to show those last two, here's the other problem that we have. Why, you know, you can do all that you can to teach your children, that you go instruct them in the ways of the Lord. But we have we have multiple generations now of teachers who have, this is all they've known. That's all they have been immersed in it their entire lives. And so we have a couple of examples here of some teachers that have been completely indoctrinated. This is what they believe. They are not going to change their worldview just because of what President Trump is doing on the national level.
If he's exactly.
Technology, are you kidding me? This is their worldview. They believe this, and they believe they're doing something good. So let's play.
Mm-hmm.
Can see what that's all about.
I think we worry a lot, and like, you know, we're teachers, we kind of worry a lot. It's kind of what we do. We worry a lot about getting like all of this right, you know? And like high school and middle school and even elementary to a degree also are like, they're messy times. Like these people are making little messes because they're kind of little messes. I'm like, that's okay. But like what I'm trying to, so whatever we can give them space to be like, okay, like, you know what? Try on that gender identity, try on that other, like, fine. You know what? We don't necessarily have to have like a three week process where we, you know, bring in all of the parents and the guidance counselor and all the teachers and have a meeting and it's like, okay, great. A student wants to use some pronouns you haven't heard. Try it. And if, you know, let them try it. And if you honestly as a person are struggling, say, hey, I'm trying, I'm working on it. I want to meet you where you are. Give me a little grace. Like, I think it'll make our lives and their lives a little bit easier.
There's a lot in that video that's very troubling. Encouraging kids to just try on a gender and see how it fits, but they're also talking about, we don't need your parents. We don't need to bring in the counselors. Let's just try. It's totally harmless, totally safe. Let's just explore this on your own. And this is being done all the time, you guys, behind parents' back. There's a lot of social transitioning going on at schools that parents are unaware of, where their kids are socially transitioning, using a new name or doing something different, and the parents have no idea what's going on. So that's kind of one of the instance that would help. And then do you want to play that other last one, or do we need to kind of get things wrapped up? This is an elementary school teacher here in Minnesota.
One of my coworkers told me that they were talking to some students in the hallway, and the students asked the other teacher if I'm a boy or a girl. And the teacher was like, does it matter? You know, she's cool. And they're like, no, I just can't figure it out. It's just so hard. I can't figure it out. It's just like, that's the goal. That's the goal.
Yeah, it's the goal is to confuse the littles, right? I don't want your listeners to walk away from this thinking, oh my gosh, CPL is just obsessed with the whole transgender gender issue. It's not, we're not obsessed with it. We only discuss it because they're obsessed with it. They're using it constantly to indoctrinate our kids, to change how they think, to change their worldview, to confuse them, to paint these battles. I mean, they're the victims, you know, anybody who's straight, white, heterosexual, Christian of all things, you're the oppressor systemically, and that's not going to change. So this whole gender battle is a major, major battle. And again, it's being used to destroy all of our traditional mores, all the Western civilization mores, and all the biblical standards of human sexuality, which by design then would be will destroy the family, right?
Oh, exactly. And along those lines, I'll share just a little clip from an upcoming episode we're doing. Last man.
'89:27, reading inappropriate material to a juvenile.
I was just reading the Bible.
Yeah, I see. An illegal translation.
Yes, the version where God says that a man is a man and a woman is a woman. It's called telling the truth.
No, it's called conversion therapy. And it's against the law to try and convert your daughter.
I don't have a daughter. I gave birth to a son.
Book her.
Wow. Wow, that's going to be powerful.
But, yeah. You know,
they used a word in there, again, talking about this deconstructing of language. They call that conversion therapy, right? When you're trying to help and counsel a young person to be comfortable in their God-given birth, biological sex, that's somehow converting them away from their perceived gender or fictional gender, right? I mean, it's just a subtle twist, but it's a very powerful, powerful twist.
Reminds me, one of our viewers called in and said that her daughter had decided to transition. And when the mom complained to the school that they were giving her a community bathroom to change from the girl clothes that she left home in to the boy clothes at school, then the school actually had the mom hospitalized in a mental health institution for 3 days.
Yeah, that's, yes. And that's not That's not hyperbole. We have had many parents come to us where their children have been taken by Child Protective Services. There was a very high profile case here in Minnesota. Oh gosh, her name escapes me. I'm blanking on the name of the mom, but her son was trying to transition into a woman as a minor. And the battle really came down to the fact that Anne-Marie Calgaro, that's what it was. She was even interviewed, I think, on Katie Couric talked about this case one time on her program as well. But her son was allowed to transition and he was basically made a ward of the state, but she never had her day in court. They called him an emancipated minor, but she never actually had her day in court. He was never actually emancipated, but they withheld all of his medical records from her. They withheld all of his school records from her. They gave him housing to live independently as a minor somewhere else. And so all of this stuff was allowed. And she, as a parent, was literally helpless. There was nothing that she could do because the government took over. So that is not, it's not hyperbole. That is where this is headed. And Minnesota, as you know, now has become a sanctuary state for transgender children seeking transgender surgeries, even if it's illegal in the state across the state line, even if the other parent, even if a parent objects to it, if one of the parents wants to do it, they can bring their child to Minnesota and they will cover for them. So yeah, it's...
So our tax dollars are not only going to kill preborn babies, but also to surgically violate children before they can...
And I'm glad you brought that up, Shanita, because, you know, I'm so tired of people calling it gender affirming surgery. We have to call it what it is. It's a chemical surgical sterilization of healthy children. Preventing them from ever procreating. And is that not an act of Satan or what? I mean, is that not
absolutely
a motive of Satan, is to prevent these children from having children? And it is, it's horrific. And it also, there's a lot of things going on here. There's a fabulous book that I've encouraged your readers to read if they have not. It's written by Dr. Miriam Grossman called Lost in Transnation. Chapter by chapter analysis of it, and just put it out to our distribution list. I think it was last year sometime. But one of her chapters really struck me was that when you have a daughter or a son who decides that they're suddenly trapped in the wrong body and they want to become somebody else, the family is forced to erase their identity. I mean, to the point where they even have to erase old family pictures. You can't use their old name anymore. You can't.
Wow.
It's like they have a death. They're grieving the loss of their actual biological son or daughter, and they have to embrace this brand new fictional character who has no idea as a minor what's going to happen to their body or the long-term consequences or the fact they're going to be a medical patient for the rest of their life. All the long-term harms. I mean, we hear there are so many kids out there now that have trans, they call it trans regret. I really encourage your listeners to take a look at some of those websites and those testimonies. And these kids need to be heard because they are not listened to by the advocacy side.
Right.
They do not want to listen to
them.
They're not to be believed. They just don't want anybody to undermine what they've done.
Well, that community is known as an accepting community, right? We accept everyone unless you decide that you have trans regret.
Yeah, I have a bunch of good friends that we work with, and they're just good friends personally too, but they have either been redeemed and saved out of the homosexual lifestyle or the trans lifestyle. And they all said the same. They go, they love bomb you when you are one of them, but the minute you are out and you say, guess what? I was saved and redeemed and I am no longer this person. Oh my gosh, you're a pariah. That welcoming community is gone. And that's one of the reasons a lot of them do stumble again, is because they're craving community. You know, God made
absolutely
People that are getting that lifestyle, it's imperative that they have community and relationships as well. Very true.
Yeah, I feel like that's kind of the tightrope that we're always walking. How do we show the love and acceptance, and at the same time teach our children we don't condone that?
Right. Oh, that's a good point. So I have always talked to my children. It's like, first of all, God made you the way he made you, and he was not confused, right? So, and it's a beautiful thing to be made in the image of God. You're male or female, period. That is one or the other. Now, there are obviously people who are struggling. Most of the time, there is well-known untreated mental health issues or some kind of trauma or some kind of abuse. All of the people that I know, that was absolutely in their past, and that was just glossed over and supposedly fixed by taking on a new identity, and it never was fixed. But one thing has stuck in my mind, especially when it comes from a Christian perspective, Shanita, and I just can't shake this one, but one of my friends who had lived as a man for 25 years had a lot of Christian friends in her life. And she said that once she was, well, first of all, they all say they were not converted out of their lifestyle. They were converted out of unbelief. And then after they were converted out of unbelief, God changed their desires and changed them and just made them new creations in Christ. And that is absolutely biblical. That is the truth, and that's what God does. But she said what was really hard for her to get over was that her Christian friends, she told me one day over lunch, she said, they didn't love me enough to tell me the truth. She goes, they didn't tell me that I was on my way to hell in my lifestyle, in my chosen lifestyle. She goes, and I had a real hard time forgiving them for that. Because she thought of all people, they knew.
Absolutely. So in that case, speaking the truth might sound like hate speech or be interpreted as hate speech, but we know that's what Jesus would do. He would tell the truth.
Tell the truth in love. I mean, we all are familiar with Mary Butterfield story, right? And I really love how it was a pastor, a local pastor in her neighborhood, who just brought her along. He said, Lord, you know, he never compromised in his faith, never compromised on his beliefs, but he said, he just showed her the truth about who she was and how God made her, and the Holy Spirit filled her in, right? God will bring you in. And there was another thing that, this was another thing that hit me too. Someone sent me one of her most recent interviews, and I just want to share this because I hadn't thought of it this way. But she was talking about grooming. And she said, if you have an aunt, let's say you have an aunt or sister or whatever, who, it doesn't matter who it is, but let's say they're lesbian, gay, trans, whatever, and they have a partner and they want to take your child to the park, Valley Fair, whatever, and show them a great time, ice cream cones, you know, blah, blah, blah. She goes, that's grooming. And I thought, ooh.
Wow.
And I had to wait for her to explain, but she says, but listen, she goes, that is grooming, just because they're normalizing their lifestyle and becoming this impressionable little mind. They're friendly, they're loving, they would never harm her. People think grooming is actual sexual harm. She goes, it's not. It's just that lifestyle in their minds. And they're themselves. They're the fun relatives. They're the fun aunt. They're the fun. And they want to be with them more. She goes, that's grooming. And I thought, oh, man.
Wow.
That's a truth we have to really think about, right?
Mm-hmm. You've opened.
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I think we have to be, I think one of the hardest things about navigating this minefield, it's messy and it's not easy and it can take decades. And there's always a risk of losing that relationship for a time. And I think that's the big fear we all have, is if we lose that relationship, we'll lose our impact in their life. But I also believe that God's word will not return void. That in scripture, and I know that's been true in my own life. Things have been spoken into my life for years that I remembered for a long time. So we just have to be led by the Holy Spirit in this. But I think as a church, I think this is something where the church really needs to do, is we need to learn how to equip parents and families who are struggling with this, because this touches pretty much every family. I don't think anyone can name anyone they don't know that's not touched by this.
Absolutely. And for our viewers who might not have children or grandchildren in a local school, what can they do to get involved?
Oh, what can they do to get involved? Well, first of all, I'd love for them to sign up at our website, sign up for our newsletters. They're very informative. We don't flood your mailbox. We don't sell our lists. But we do look at current issues, and our whole point is to just educate and equip. And everything is shareable, and we really want people to be able to use that. And we break it down in ways that's understandable, relatable, shareable, and it's documented, cited, and sourced, and they can just use that to educate themselves. People. As far as grandparents, just be reading scripture to the children, teach them about God, really sow truth into their lives. I'm not a grandma yet, but I'm praying to be one, and that's what I want to do. But I think that's really important, because we know a lot of parents are really strapped, and this is just an issue that they're just one of Satan's most effective tools is busyness, right?
Mm-hmm.
Busy. Mm-hmm. Can't really focus on the things that are really important. And I was a victim of that myself as a young mom.
Mm-hmm.
It's really important to carve out that special time in teaching and learning. Parents and grandparents, absolutely. That's generally speaking, a lot of people that we talk to are their grandparents because they got a little extra time on their hands. You know, they've been meaningful to get involved in, and what better way to stay fruitful into your old age than to be working on, you know, what's true and good and just trying to help, you know, rescue kids from all these horrific things. And we didn't even touch on trafficking, so
right. All right, next time. Yes. Yeah. Well, thank you so much. And one more time, mention your website.
Sure. It's childprotectionleague.com. And right. On that website, you will find all kinds of information. Everything is free, downloadable. Please share it and let your friends know. And we just really thank you for having us on your program. It's really been a pleasure.
We are extremely grateful for your work and all the resources that are available out there. So thank you so much. Bless you. Bye-bye.